Introduce yourself, please.
Hello, I am Senator Pat Petty, and I represent the 6th District in Kansas.
Welcome. Roll the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Pat and myself today, Philip Gardis from Kansas City, Kansas, and we're going to get to you in just a second. Also with me, my KCUR colleague, Laura Ziegler, who is part of our community engagement team. Today, she is engaging with us. We're going to talk about the budget. We're going to talk about education. A couple of surprises, I think, came down the pike in the State House this week, and we're going to get to all of that. But I'm going to ask you my two favorite questions for our legislators. Pat, tell me about your kids and your pets. And tell me about how you got hooked on politics.
Okay, I'll start with my children. I have two daughters.
Alicia. Some people start with their pets, but I like this.
Oh, I like my girls. They're Alicia and Andrea, and they're both moms. And I have five grandchildren, and one lives on the Missouri side with two of my grandchildren. One lives on the Kansas side with three of my grandchildren. I have a dog named Zeke, a Chesapeake Bay, and actually he's my husband's dog, but I remembered to get him out of his kennel this morning. And I have a cat named Grady, who is kind of on his last leg. But always have had pets. Love pets.
And how did you find your way into politics? I think it's the family business, is it not?
Yes. Well, it's interesting. I mean, this is going to sound rather sexist, but as a daughter, as the oldest of five, I didn't really see myself going to politics. But I did have a great groundwork laid for me by my parents, because they were community activists, and which is a good thing. And my father was in the Kansas legislature for four terms. And
when was that?
He was in the legislature from 1968 to 76.
So Bob Docking would have been governor at the time?
That's right. Mm. That's right. And actually, my father was in his last 2 years was the assistant minority leader in the House. So anyway, you know, I was involved in running and working on his campaigns and when he was running for office. And then I went into education and got really active in my local teachers association and KNEA. And then the opportunity came along to run for the Kansas House in 1992. And I ran and won and was in the House for two terms. And then I ran for commissioner. And when we unified with the city and county, and I was a commissioner for 13 and a half years, and then I ran for the Senate. So it seems my political career has gotten long now, even though I still feel as I haven't been around that long.
All right, I'm kind of a little tired of listening to myself talk, so let's go around the table. Philip, you have shown up. You're an activist, so let's start with you, and let's hear what you saw this week in the State House, or what do you think is coming up that that we need to talk about with Pat?
It has been a pretty exciting week. I was warned to come with a few questions, and I wanted to start off with something as positive as I could. So I was going to ask right off the start if you thought that there was really some common good being accomplished this year in the State House. Are we missing the good news from Topeka? Any past legislation lately that would please both a pro-marriage for some people, trickle-down believing, non-white fearing, good Christian supporter of the governor, and someone like myself, a tree-hugging, progressive tax, anti-gun, Obamacare, LGBT, pro-respect person?
My answer would have to be no.
I was afraid of that.
No. Let's explore that a little bit. I mean, is this a new phenomenon? I mean, reaching back to when your dad was there, I mean, I think there probably used to be plenty of legislation that would please the folks that Philip described.
I think the difference might be now that I actually was speaking about this just the other day, the fact that there seems to be very little common ground to work across the aisles, and because of the numbers, there seems to be less interest to do that. And there is the power of the election, and the majority of Republicans in both House, Senate, and the governor's office that I feel has empowered some people to think that this is a good time to move forward with legislation that many of us might feel is somewhat extreme. And so it's more prolific than it has been for me when I was in the House or now I was in the Senate. I will say that I try to go to the Capitol every day saying it's a great day, but by the end of the day, I don't feel quite the same way. But it's kind of the only way to face every day up there.
Yeah, Laura, I want to bring you here. We've got a new project coming up. You've been in Wyandotte County talking to folks. What are their political fears, or what is it that do you think that they want out of their government? What should Pat take back and demand get done?
I think just to piggyback on what she was saying, resonating with what people talk about nationally, I think what we hear is that people want their legislators to have some kind of civil discourse and work towards some common good, like Philip was suggesting. I think that we're doing this project that looks at Wyandotte and Johnson counties, and of course, politically and by a number of metrics, they couldn't be more different. But what we're going to be exploring in this project called Beyond Our Borders, that community engagement is doing, is looking for aspects of the two communities that bring them together, as well as what they both perceive to be challenges. And, of course, that's reflected in Topeka. One of the questions that we're going to be probing is, how do Wyandotte and Johnson County work together in Topeka or relate to one another? What impact does Topeka have on the two communities in both counties?
Well,
and since you have a district that straddles you're a good person to address
that. When you talk to those that are involved in local government, you realize that their interests are very common. And so what they bring forward, whether I'm looking at the legislation request from Merriam or whether I'm looking at the legislative request from Overland Park or from Wyandotte County, that they're very similar. The kind of the difficulty that I see is that many legislators have demified locally elected officials, whether they be school board members or whether they be on city councils or whether they be on county commissions. And I guess this was brought home to me the other day when a legislator said, or when a constituent said that their legislator said, "I don't want to hear from you as a school board member. I want to hear from the parents." Well, the school board member is a parent. I mean, so it's putting them in another category.
What does that mean? What do you think that they were talking about?
That I guess it would mean that for some reason, because they're on a school board, that their attitude, their thought about public education are colored by the fact that they have been elected by the same people that have elected myself or any other legislator. And
that somehow they're not going to have the interests of the parents.
They're not going to have the interests. They're going to have somehow the interests of the budget that, of course, reflects on anything that they can do within their school district. And that changes the whole thing. So we're seeing this in the attitude, I'd say, towards elections. There's an overwhelming urge to make our elections partisan, to move them to November.
Well, you're referring to legislation that's in the State House now that would move school board elections and some other elections into November and make them partisan elections. A lot of people, local officials, are fighting that. But you said something, and I want to get Philip in on this, and I want to make sure that I'm hearing it correctly. So, the partisanship and that and the rancor that is in the State House, you think that filters down to people looking at school board officials or city commissioners differently? And Philip, I want to ask you. I mean, do you think that just lumps all politicians together? You see what I'm saying? That sort of partisan bickering that we see in the State House, does that filter down to the UG or some school board?
Well, I almost want to come to it from the other direction as a citizen. In my dealings with people in the community, and including friends in Johnson County, I don't find this level of rancor. I find that we have an amazing number of similar interests. But somehow what I hear out of Topeka is endless attempts to increase privilege for the wealthy, gun promotion, more abortion restrictions, more education cuts, immigration fear, LGBT fear, mental and physical health care cuts, environmental protection, deregulation attempts, infrastructure neglect, increased burden put on, and this is one of my favorites for, I hope Pat helped support this, nutsiness of promoting giveaways to businesses to move back and forth across the state line, which all it does is hurt our local taxpayers who have to pick up the money we've given away to the business to move 10 minutes.
Yeah, I need to push back on this a little bit. So, I mean, but those political positions are not illegitimate, correct, Pat? I mean, these are people who believe what they believe, and we shouldn't dismiss them, should we?
Well, they do believe what they believe, but I think that what is going on is that we are, my constituents and are saying, you have a job, it's the business of government, and I would like for you to do your job and not spend it all the time on going off into these extreme tangents. And my colleagues, or some of my colleagues, are using the fact that they've been elected and that this is their right. And as long as they're elected, for whether it's 2 years or 4 years, then they have the will of the people to move forward on these issues that don't address the root needs. And that would be, in this case in Kansas, the budget.
Yeah, yeah. Laura, I saw you lean forward. What you want to get in on this, I see.
I think it begs the question, they want you to go do your job, and the people that elected you obviously feel in sync with the way you may vote. But the people that elected, some of the people that you say reflect those quote-unquote extreme positions, clearly feel that they want their representatives to push forward on those pieces of the agenda. So, I mean, what I hear is this reluctance to compromise. You know, it's one person feels that their agenda is the only way it can be, and because they're in the majority, that it makes it difficult for the people who feel differently, and who represent constituents that feel differently, to make progress.
I think you're right. There is the difficulty of compromising, but I also think that there are issues that have become hot button issues, like the election, that if we listen to our communities, the question is why? Why are elections hot button issues? Because I have to say, I haven't, in the time that I was running for office, when I was campaigning, I didn't have one constituent say anything to me about moving elections to November. So, and I have to be honest and say, I really have had very little response from constituents about this issue, except when it comes to those that are representing groups at the local level, city commissions, and school boards, and saying, this does not do anything for us to continue to do good government. And so we're questioning why, what is the point, and what is it achieving? And then when you see that it's moving to being partisan elections or ticket checkoff, then the question becomes, are we really talking about good government? Are we just talking about becoming more partisan and having a checkoff where you check off whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, and that's all you have to do? You don't have to pay any attention to who's running for office. That's the number one issue. So the legislation just gets more and more into the weeds of the fact that that has to be what the ultimate goal is. And the bill that had a hearing just this last week had just those things in it. Move to November, be a partisan ticket for every election, and no matter we're talking about school board or city councils, and even to the point of demanding that the elections be held in schools, and the schools have to have an in-service day so that there aren't students there on that day. This is just a whole movement to, we don't need locally. We can make the decisions in Topeka, and we know better than you. And that, to me, that's Big Brother, and I have a hard time dealing with that.
I need to move on to something else. But before I do, I need to ask you, Pat, why you think that these bills which move local elections into the realm of partisanship. I mean, you know, tell me what you think that's all about.
That's all about keeping a conservative Republican in office.
That's all it's about. There's no good government aspect to that, do you think?
I have a hard time seeing good government when constituents, for example, in Wyandotte County, voted that they wanted, when Wyandotte County and Kansas City, Kansas unified, that they wanted those elections to be nonpartisan. Or when Johnson County, when their county commissioners, citizens voted that they wanted the county commission's elections to be nonpartisan. So we have examples of our citizens saying, and you know, I would have to be honest, when I go to the door, people often say to me, I don't vote for the party, I vote for the person. So I think the voter wants to reflect the fact that they want to make the decisions and that their party doesn't have to decide that for them.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Laura, go ahead.
I was going to say, how much do you think that's characteristic of Northeast Johnson County? Excuse me. How much do you think that's a characteristic of the constituents that you represent, Northeast Johnson County and Wyandotte County, and do they feel differently outstate?
Yeah. Well, if we look at the voter turnout and we look at the results of the election, you might say that that's somewhat different. But I will say that as I campaigned, that was what I would usually hear from a voter.
The people want nonpartisan elections.
They want they don't vote for the person they vote, or for the party they vote for the person. And I think, you know, as a commissioner, it was reflected to me that people were proud about the fact that these were nonpartisan elections. I would be overreaching a little bit to speak for all of Johnson County, but they overwhelmingly voted for that change with their county commission, and so it would seem that they are saying that. And I never hear that when it comes to school board elections. I never hear people saying, "Oh, I want to know whether they're a Democrat or Republican."
Yep. Yep. All right. I need to move on to the budget. And I keep saying every time we do one of these programs, we're not going to talk about the budget, but you can't get around it. So just today I read that there are some backroom talks among Republican leadership now about the need to raise taxes beyond the increase that Governor Brownback has proposed in cigarettes and liquor. So my question to you, Pat, is in the end, do you think that a general tax increase, income tax, but in some of these other things they're talking about, is that going to get through the legislature?
It's a very difficult thing to say whether it will or will not. I mean, there are when you have a core group of people that believe that less government is better, and so they are looking for less and less. And they support the position that the governor has had now for over 4 years about reducing the tax base, and that when reducing, you will grow, and it hasn't proven to be true. Then you have people in the middle that are saying this really isn't working, and so we have to make some sort of change. I have heard about, you know, raising gasoline tax. That's been bannered around. At this point, I don't know where that's going. I think it's going to be, but I also will say that there's already in the midst of the discussion of we'll probably be back for a veto session. So that's already been thrown out there as well. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to come to a point that everybody agrees on if we don't continue to do it on the backs of our children.
Yeah, and by that you mean cutting funding to K through 12 education.
I do.
And some and cuts, right?
Higher
and
education
a little higher
as well.
Education as well. Philip, I saw you lean forward. There's something you want to before we move on about
the
budget.
Well, real briefly on the budget. With gas prices lower right now, if there ever was a good time to put some more tax on the gas to help actually pay for the infrastructure of the roads and streets and bridges that we need, this would be the time to do it. And I think it's been unfair that we, as we get rid of the income tax, we try to do infrastructure tax based on property tax across the state. It's not fair to those homeowners.
All right, I want to play a story from KCUR's Peggy Lowe and then talk about it on the other side.
Elle Boatman was scrolling through her Facebook feed Tuesday afternoon during a break from her job at Wichita State. That's where she learned that Brownback had rescinded an executive order by former Governor Kathleen Sebelius. Now LGBT state workers were no longer safe from discrimination. The news left the trans woman and other gay workers devastated.
But it's still extremely disturbing and scary because this is real discrimination. This is, could be, you know, tomorrow they could be fired.
Boatman says she takes heart from some protections under the university system. Yesterday, officials at KU and K-State issued statements reiterating commitment to the school's non-discrimination policies that includes sexual orientation and gender identity.
All right. Now, it would be easy just to say that, I don't know, that this is a distraction from other things. But, you know, in the governor's state of the state message, he talked about rebuilding the economy through his vision of what a Kansas family should be. So this shouldn't be unexpected, should it, Pat?
I guess in today's world, nothing's ever unexpected. I find it saddens me, though, because it then becomes the national discussion about Kansas, and it really is not painting the picture of Kansas that I believe that our governor has been saying, that he wants to attract business, that he wants to grow our economy, that he wants to grow the population of Kansas. And it leaves me to feel that that's not going to be attractive to businesses when the climate nationally is not there to match what he is now doing with our state employees.
Yeah. Laura, you're out and about. Does anybody ever talk about this?
Yes.
Really?
I think they do. Again, to Senator Patty's point, I think, people have different feelings about civil rights regarding sexual orientation, and we all respect that. I think that the wave of national sentiment on this topic has clearly moved, and 38 states are honoring gay marriage now, same-sex marriage, and we were national headlines for what the governor did, which was repeal an executive order by the previous governor to eliminate protection for the LGBT community in state jobs. So I think, regardless of how people feel, if you're concerned about economic development and attracting not just jobs, but people, you know, we talk about Overland Park being one of the most attractive cities in the country and people moving to the Midwest because of it's an innovation hub and a startup, exciting place for startup businesses. It can't be. I think people feel like it's a setback because of that. It casts us in light of it casts us in the light of a backward sort of social environment.
Mm. You know, we used to think of ourselves as strong people in Kansas, and we were strong enough to be and let be. That tolerance came just as a byproduct of the good kind of people we were. And this strange fear of anything different is a new thing, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Got to wrap it up. But before we do, I give Philip one chance to tell Pat what she has to do when she goes back to the State House on Monday when the week begins. So what's the one thing she's got to take back and get done for you?
Oh, hang in there.
Thank you. I'll be glad to try to do that one.
All right. You can hear us every Tuesday on Up to Date with my friend Steve Kraske anytime on KCUR.org. Just search for State House Blend. Program is produced by Matt Hodapp. I'm Sam Zeff. Philip, thank you. Laura, thank you.
You're welcome.
In our quest to know you just a little bit better, we go out of the program with your favorite song. What is it?
Oh, that's rough. I don't know if I'd be able to answer that.
Let's see. I guess I have to just right now, since it comes to my head, Home on the Range. home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play. And we've actually just passed a legislation out of Senate Transportation to name a portion of a highway Home on the Range.
Woo-hoo.
Highway, because it's close to the cabin in Kansas where Home on the Range was written.
It's a great choice. I'm Sam Zeff. We'll see you next time on State House Blend.
when the heavens are bright with the light from the glittering sky.